Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. It wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
Folks, welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your number one unrefined motorsports podcast. It's Brian with Rob and Ashley once again. Folks, how we doing this week? I know we all had a somewhat busy weekends and lots of race and stuff to talk about, so how we all doing?
I'm good. I'm actually good. Regardless of what some people might think.
we'll save that for later on.
But, you're back from Atlanta, right? How'd that go?
I'm back. I had a great time, so I'm curious to hear all your negative Nancy comments.
I don't know. Where do we start? There's not a whole lot of news that came out this week that I can recall,
there was Cole Pern tweeting for the first time in 2 years. That was big
news. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, like, greasy stuff to talk about on the show this week between that. Yeah. And Denny Hamlin and Samantha Bush, like all sorts of like...
A lot of butt stuff this week.
Yeah, just stuff. Stuff happening in all the holes. Yeah. So,
every hole's covered.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the butt plug thing.
For those who missed it, I forget who talked about it, but I think it was Chase Briscoe and Bill Jr.
Yeah.
It came about because Chase Briscoe talked about, I think, in his Athletic 12 questions about how the drivers, when they get weighed now, they have to strip down of their underwear. And they used to put weights and shit in their driver suits and whatnot, and now they can't do that. And that's why Cole came up with that tweet, because that's the perfect way to get that through.
Get the tech shed. You just got to figure out a way to slide that thing back in before you cross the scales, you know.
Would that help when you're in the scales? I thought it was just for the weigh-in. I don't know.
Well, that would be for sure. But I think some series will weigh cars beforehand too. But I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I like the idea of somebody being slipped a butt plug in victory lane before they go across the scales. That would be pretty funny to me. But
that's only a dirt thing. They don't do that in NASCAR. You're fine. But anyways, Atlanta happened. Ashley was there, and Rob and I watched it from home.
Yes.
I don't think we have a whole lot to say about Saturday's races, do we? Because they were both dog shit.
I'll be perfectly honest. I didn't have a chance to watch either of them, so I'm going to sit back on this one and let y'all talk about it. You were actually at the track, right, True Love? You only Sunday?
Yeah, I did not go to the doubleheader.
Yeah. Oh, so you didn't even go. Okay. Well, I only caught the last stage of the truck race because I had stuff going on, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Wasn't that one okay?
I mean, it was better than the Xfinity race. It was a Kyle Busch show.
Better than Daytona.
Also, yeah, it wasn't a shit show. Let's say that. It wasn't a crash fest. Everybody drove well. Again, Kyle Busch was in the race. That surely helped. He won. Nobody was shocked there. No. Nobody really made a good run in him at the end.
No.
It was what it was. At least it wasn't embarrassing. The truck series needed a race that went that way. So good for them. And what's that?
They needed a little palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
No doubt somebody tore them all a new ass. Speaking of tungsten butt plugs, tore everyone in that series a new asshole. Yeah. Keep it in line this week, boys and girls.
That is very true. And then the Xfinity race, again, was boring as absolute fuck. Just a single car line for almost the whole race. And at the very end...
So the last three laps...
Yeah, last three laps, it was kind of entertaining, but Austin Hill wins again.
Oh, yeah, I did watch that. That's right.
That's the thing. There's nothing to talk about. It was just that boring of a fucking race.
Jesse Love dominating the whole race.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anytime, I'll shout out our boy Rowdy on the show here that we've mentioned before. I guess he knows Jesse Love, and he's not, I don't know if I'm airing dirty laundry, not much of a fan. So anytime Jesse Love is on screen, I'll send him a picture of me flipping the screen off. And I know we were both pretty, you know, pleased to see what went down at the end of that. But yeah, big fucking surprise, Austin Hill with his big old tape nose. Yeah.
Oh, I'm remembering now. Everybody ran out of gas the last couple laps. That's what happened. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
disappointing.
So yeah, just a real dud. So let's moving into Sunday. Let's just evaluate how everybody was thinking about this race. At least how I look at it. Again, Daytona, all the races really. I mean, Xfinity was okay, but the other two are awful. Saturday race is both awful. So when you go into Sunday, we get two straight plate tracks in a row. Now, and let me say this. I will never call them drafting tracks. I will always call them plate tracks. I'm not calling it a tapered spacer.
Yeah, I'm not doing that either. I have a real hard time changing my terminology, too, being 75 years old over here. Like, I just
and it
can't.
Does, it does the same thing. It means the same thing. It's a tapered spacer, a plate, same job.
You can't even call them super speedways anymore because Atlanta's a mile and a half, so who knows? Dale Jr.'s taken to calling them speedway races. I guess that's probably where I'll end up drawing the compromise at some point once I'm definitely the old man in the corner yelling about stuff. But, yeah, drafting tracks, no thanks.
Yeah, but before we get into the race... Again, Ashley was there. Ashley, talk. What did anything happen? Anything interesting? And just kind of check out the normal pre-race stuff.
Yeah, normal stuff. Me and my brother went down there early. Andy was supposed to go with us, but his tour bus broke down in the middle of the night, so he had to drive separate.
That sucks, dude.
Yeah, he met us there later. He got there like right before the flyover.
But well, at least he made it for the race, so.
Yeah, he did make it for the race, luckily. Oh, yeah, me and my brother Cody went. We went early. What did we do? We went to the merch haulers because I wanted to walk around and see if there's anything new this year that caught my eye, and it was all dog shit. So,
yeah, Fanatics has managed to print off the same run of T-shirts they have for the past 15 years, I take it?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you did buy some merch, though.
I did. Well, yeah. Cody bought some merch first. He wanted a Chase Elliott hat, which, being the hometown track, that hauler was insane. It was like six rows across, like
Jesus
lines all the way back across to the other side of the parking lot. Yeah.
That's awesome. That was a lot. Anything special for the race as far as like the Hooters stuff is concerned? Because that car looked fucking nice.
Yeah, Cody did buy a Hooters shirt. It was probably the best looking shirt in the hauler. So
I know.
And that,
I know.
That car did look better in person too. They changed the orange to like the normal Hooters orange, and it looked better.
Hendrick always does like special hats for the races that sell out immediately. Like they're all like a limited edition one of like a couple hundred with like a patch on the side of it. So usually people line up to get those as soon as they can. I know that.
Which, by the way, if you ever end up at the Hendrick gift shop in Charlotte, they have a lot of those left over that they printed up for the website or whatever. So if you miss one and you happen to be in Charlotte, maybe you'll get a second chance after all.
Because they're like $300 usually on eBay after the fact. Yeah. So.
Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, $40 at the hauler is too much in my book.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So, it looked packed. Like.
It felt packed.
Yeah.
Definitely more so than when we were there in August, for sure.
Yeah. And the weather was beautiful, too. It was sunny, like low 60s.
It was another thing. Another thing that NASCAR really needed after last weekend. So
yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So perfect race day weather. So after he bought a Chase hat, we met up with my buddy Eric, who was down from Canada. Him and his brother flew down for the race.
Nice.
So I got to meet up with him and drink some beers and meet some of his friends from down here. So
Canadians get after it on the cold beer front.
Yeah. Yeah, he has a podcast too. It's called Hot Pass Podcast. He focuses on like NASCAR betting. So if y'all want any NASCAR betting advice, go listen to him. But him and his girlfriend will be at Vegas next week too, and then I think he's going to Talladega too. So
nice.
It's a long, long haul from Canada.
It is a long way.
Yeah. But yeah, went inside. I don't know. Oh yeah, I did buy a T-shirt from a guy in the parking lot.
You didn't get me one, did you?
No, well, he never came back around, so I never saw him again.
And what does it say?
Well, the front says, fuck around and find out.
I didn't know that.
But the back is why I bought it, because the back says, was it
Bitches Race Day. We talked all about this last year. This was a shirt that was on my hit list. Yeah. I never got it. And Ashley has it now, and I still don't fucking have it. So I'm sure the next race I go to, I'll be able to get one.
Yeah, they said those guys said that they go to a ton of races. It's the same guys, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it for 20. He said normally he sells them for 30. I was like, well, there's no way I'd pay 30 for it.
No, but he must have recognized you from the Fox broadcast last week.
I got that celebrity discount.
Fucking A.
I pulled out my phone and showed him that 2-second clip.
Yeah. Remember this?
He said no. I was in the parking lot selling T-shirts.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, so that leads us, I guess, to the actual race itself now. So,
yeah. Giant hit with everybody I know, and I'll explain my gripes a little bit later. But from what I gather, I had some friends who were there as well. My buddy Ken Bob was telling us that... at least in his section, people were pretty much standing up for the entirety of the race.
Yeah.
Like, same. Jazzed. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. I stood more than I sat on Sunday.
That's cool. I love that vibe. Yeah. You know, because I know how it is at some of the places I'll go, like, loud and, like, everyone kind of, like, gets drunk and passes out from the heat and, you know.
There's, like, a lull in the middle of the race where you just kind of zone out. But not since they did this repave or whatever you want to call it at Atlanta.
Definitely like the gold standard for what restrictor plate or whatever the fuck we're calling it. Whatever this racing is, it's definitely outshines Daytona and Talladega now, which is problematic for those places. But
I mean, let's not totally like 100% praise this though, because I mean there were some elements within this race that, you know, transferred over from Daytona. Like, there was a little bit of fuel mileage stuff going on, but there was also so many wrecks and the cars are so loose that like a lot of that strategy just didn't work. Like, it wasn't part of everybody's goal. But yeah, Rob, let's at least talk about how we initially thought about the race, because lap two, another embarrassing shit show of a wreck. Josh Williams caught up in it, really summed it up great. Like, he thought he got out of the ARCA series years ago, but apparently he's still in there.
Well, first stop on the tour of hate. Anytime Austin Dillon wrecks, I always get excited about it a little bit. I don't want to see him get hurt or anything, but it's nice to see him clap the wall once in a while. Fail. You know, fail. Especially when it's one of these ugly ass cars. Like, you want to see the three in like the Bass Pro colors or something badass. This was
teal.
What is like some like, you know, I don't even know what turquoise medication this is for. Listen. Something that'll kill you in less time than whatever disease you have that's ailing you will kill you.
I just feel like these last 2 weeks, and especially with how good Kyle did last year, I see this as Dale spiritually telling Richard to get that kid out of that car.
Yeah, get like,
it's time. Pop. Put somebody else in that three. Put Kyle in that three. Yeah. Just imagine the merch sales, the reaction from fans if you put Kyle Busch in that car. Like, it'd be chaos. But who knows if that'll happen. But regardless, lap two, embarrassing wreck. Everybody checks up. Nobody can go anywhere. So that's where, again, me and you, Rob, we both had the same reaction. Like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Another whole race of this. Two weekends in a row, and it's just like... So, that's why I can understand the frustration.
I feel like my complaints to literally everyone that I have their number for stems from, I'm just kind of over this style of racing. You know, cars always get wrecked. Everything gets torn up. Again, Daytona was awful. You know, it certainly wasn't great anyway. And I'm just kind of tired of seeing this. And I'll elaborate on this a little bit later as we get towards the finish of the race and the reaction to it, which is warranted, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I'm just tired of this. I'm just tired of the style of racing, and I hate that NASCAR seems to be, and again, I'll elaborate later, inching towards this in a greater way, and this is how we're going to be deciding, you know, it has a much greater piece of deciding who the champion is going to be at the end of the year, and a system I already feel is kind of dubious at best, but...
I mean, you're not totally off base with some of those comments. I guess where I'll say this differs to the other two plate tracks, you know, obviously it's a much smaller track, yeah. But you could, the drivers themselves, they said it was more fun. They said it was harder to drive.
Yeah.
There was passing going on. And yeah, but there were a lot of wrecks, but there were still like 30 cars on the track at the end.
That's
like,
right.
There were only a couple cars that were completely out. So it's like, it's kind of one of those things where, man, it's the purist, the old school fan, there are reasons to shit on this, but at the same time, when you do that with a race that turned out to be this entertaining, like, yes, was it the cleanest racing? Not necessarily. You know, it was still plate racing, but it had everything you wanted. It had drama, it had accidents, it had passing, it had one of the best finishes in the last 50 years, probably. It had its moments. The beginning, probably the first third, it was a little iffy as far as, is this actually going to be a fun, awesome race? But nope. Last couple stages, it just full throttle and was, you couldn't turn away from it. And this is the race that NASCAR needed last week. And I'm hoping that a lot of those new fans came back and watched this week because they got the show that they deserve to see.
And I know it's probably different in person, True Love. I know we already talked about how everyone was standing up the entire time. That's already an indicator of something special. So what does this look like? And I know we talked about this before because both of y'all have been to Atlanta and experienced this before. But what is it like? What was this like in person?
I mean, I've been to, you know, the previous version of Atlanta plenty. And then I've been to every race that they've done at Atlanta since the repave. And it's like, it's night and day. I don't ever want to miss a race at this new Atlanta. And the vibe there, the energy there is, if you're sitting down, you're on the edge of your seat the whole time, or you're standing up. No one wants to miss like a second of it.
If you're sitting down, you're probably using whatever medication Austin Dillon was selling.
So I did see someone get carried up the stairs on a stretcher with a bloody face. So I don't know what happened to him, but
nice.
This was this was probably like stage one too. So
yeah, when things weren't looking as bright.
But yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about the end of the race yet, but man, that place.
Yeah.
No one could believe it.
Well, one thing that I, a couple things I do want to talk about real quick. One was, of course, Joey Logano getting sent to the back for manipulating his glove to have like webs on it.
Yeah, we
got to
talk about the glove. The first time I've ever seen a cheated up glove or cheated up piece of safety equipment ever. So love that. Like as for as silly as it is, I also love the fact that they thought that would work and they'd get away with it. Like I total respect for
that. Apparently NASCAR usually doesn't check that sort of thing, but I guess recently they've been going a lot more hard on safety gear, making sure the pit crew guys have their fire retardant underwear on or whatever. I guess there's been some guys who haven't been wearing that.
The thing is, though, you could see Joey's glove on TV. Like, it looked like a fucking mitt.
And if you guys don't know what we're talking about, you'll see it in qualifying at these places. Even at, I want to say you see it at the mile and a half sometimes, too. Like, they'll hold their hand up to the gap in the window to, you know, block that hole between the window net and the post. And apparently, it actually does provide enough of an advantage to keep doing it and for Penske to work on it and risk getting, you know, tossed to the back of the field. It was a drive-through penalty at the beginning of the race, so that's pretty serious right there. And I don't know if anyone else had done that, if it was just Penske or just the 22 guys that had figured it out, but I've never seen that happen before either, getting tossed for a pair of gloves, you know.
But it ended up working out to his advantage, though, because he ended up missing that wreck and not really losing anything.
That's a fact.
Actually, again, I respect Joey. I respect Penske for trying that because it's To me, it's just hilarious. So yeah, that was cool.
You don't win if you don't try, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing I want to bitch about from the broadcast perspective, and I thought they did a pretty good job here. I liked all the fan shots that Fox was putting on the screen. It was kind of nice to watch everyone react to accidents and that sort of thing.
My friend Emily was there, and she got on the broadcast. Nice. She was reacting when Denny got spun.
Yeah.
Was she in the one in the, like, a Joey outfit or something? Because I feel like I saw somebody in a Joey. Okay, I saw somebody react when Joey wrecked, but I thought they were wearing Joey shit. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's... I did see
a clip of a sad Joey fan at one point.
Maybe that's what I'm getting confused about.
But also, like, the return of the Crank It Up segment during Pit Cycle.
Oh, they did that again this week?
Well, they did do a regular Crank It Up at the end, so I feel like they're just kind of trying to show both sides of it. But when that happened at first, it was like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Trying out some different cranks.
Yeah, and it's just my favorite segment in these races. Hearing these cars go full bore, you know, in the pack, it sounds like nothing else. You really get to see a look at, or get a close look at, just how much these guys are hauling the mail and how on edge they are. And for them to decide to do that when we're doing single lug nut pit stops, you know, was kind of a bummer. When you kind of need that information because everyone's getting their strategy set up, etc. But whatever, they made it right. Whatever, they want to try new stuff out, that's cool too. But come on, man, like we're gonna be cranking it up in line at the fucking concession stand pretty soon, you know. Anyway, back to positivity.
I mean, like, what else is there to talk about with this race other than the finish? I guess you know, like, I guess that's actually no. I guess that's really
there's
the biggest thing to highlight
too.
Yeah. There were a bunch of four wide racing. Yeah.
That battle for the lead up front between Larson and Truex and everybody trading spots, you know, that was entertaining to watch for sure. And one thing I do want to shout out, especially with the finish, is just how clean everybody kept it.
Yep.
You know, this is the kind of thing where you, when these guys are in these.
Where did he finish? Is he up there?
Well, he was top 15, but.
He got caught up in a wreck at the end.
Not close enough to want to destroy things.
No, Josevar would have been in front of him had he not got caught up in that last wreck. Let's say that.
Yeah. But yeah, it was cool, like, to see everyone, you know, race with respect and make this work. And again, I think it's as much of a product of the type of racetrack it is. You know, like, you actually do get spread out a little bit, and the runs are a little bit more pronounced than you would normally see at Daytona or Talladega. So again, this is the gold standard for restrictor plate racing now. And it was definitely on display the whole time. You know, there's a lot of times you thought they should have wrecked and probably would have had it been elsewhere, but they didn't. So it was entertaining, definitely fun. I'm not here to shit on that. That's for sure.
The fact that they had that last 6 or 8 lap run, totally clean passing in that finish. I mean,
three wide to the finish with no one touching doors. That's fucking cool.
We're so used to seeing finishes like that where half the field is crashing behind them, which, don't get me wrong, that's a great spectacle, but it's almost... Actually, no, it's better to see them finish that way and everybody get away clean. And
absolutely.
That's what you want. So, really just wonderful stuff. A great redemption from last week. I would say I don't know if it's a fear necessarily, but now people are saying, well, maybe they do this to Texas. Texas is shit, so I don't really know if it's going to make it worse, but I guess it's more, do we want another one of these types of tracks? Do drivers want this?
I enjoy this type of racing. But I don't think we need any more on the schedule. Like, what we have is plenty.
Agreed.
That's kind of any more.
The drivers said they had a good time, but they were also scared. Like, even the people that wrecked, like Larson's like, I was having a great time. Like, it was scary, but at the same time, it was fun. I wouldn't want to do this every week. Who knows? I mean, I don't know what else you can do to Texas to fix that track other than just
still
level
think you
it.
You should just burn it down. Yeah. We don't need it.
But
the need for Texas has long passed.
I don't know, man. We got a real track on the schedule this week at Vegas. It'll be another great race, and Ashley will be there again, so we'll get another road report. So
sure.
I don't know. A nice positive NASCAR note to move on to the next week.
Yeah. But here's the end of my complaint session here. People are hailing this as the greatest NASCAR race of all, the greatest finish, blah, blah, blah. And
it's recency bias.
It is 100% recency bias. And like, what do you expect when you essentially govern all the cars to go the same speed? Like, of course everyone's going to be within a few tenths of each other, or hundredths or thousandths or whatever it is. So, and the only reason we don't see finishes like this more often is because everyone drives like shit. They take each other out. So like, to say, and again, it was a great moment. I love seeing Daniel Suarez get a win. That was definitely really cool. But I wonder if people would be as excited if he wasn't the guy. And also, like, come on. Like, you can't compare this to Darlington or anything like that. Any of these finishes that everyone, you know, louds as being the greatest. I just don't see this. Best race of the year so far, without question. Jesus Christ. You know, probably the best drafting race we've seen. See, I'm already losing it. The transition is complete.
No, you're
fucked. Yeah, best drafting race of
the new era.
The new era, for sure. Yeah, the Gen 7 next-gen car. I don't think there's any way you could argue against that. Yeah. But to call this an all-timer, as far as an entire race is concerned, and what NASCAR media is really pushing hard for you to agree with, I can't see that.
I don't know if NASCAR is pushing people to make this the greatest race of all time.
Doing what they got to do with what they've been given, and right now they have to focus on how good that finish was to clean up the past couple weeks.
And they should. I mean, this is part of riding the Netflix wave and this kind of resurgence the last few years. And this is even if we want to be old curmudgeons and talk about Darlington instead of this, it's still a fucking amazing finish, and everyone should be happy about it.
I mean, my phone has that night, it blew up with people like, all my friends that have watched for years and years, and people who never watch, my phone just blowing up with people like, oh my God.
And that's the thing, like,
and wanting to go to that race next time.
And that's the thing, I still would like to see this place in person.
Yeah, I think everyone should see it in person at least once.
But, you know, I'm not about to, like, you know, take my bag and my ball and go home or whatever, and I'm not watching NASCAR anymore, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But, you know, I definitely feel... this is how I imagine it felt in, you know, the late 90s for all the old school folks.
We were there. I mean, it was weird, but I think at this point, I just love racing, and as long as stuff on the track is worth watching, you know, you can bitch about the rules, you can bitch about the changes all you want, but at the end of the day, it's still cars going fast as fuck and trying to win, and until the racing gets actually unwatchable, then, you know,
haven't lost me yet, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, a few more positive things I want to say before we move on. For me, it was really cool. It was me and Andy's first race together, and having just come off.
Oh, that's cool.
Driven around that track together.
Right.
Not too long ago. And then, like, being out on the track, it's like, oh, man, I can't imagine them going 3 wide. And then seeing them go fucking 4 wide lap after that was pretty wild.
There is something so special about getting down on the surface before a race. I got to do that at Eldora. I got to do that at the Chili Bowl. And it was just, you know, when you really, like, internalize just what these guys are doing, it's really fucking cool. And that's a really special experience. So, I didn't know it was your first race together. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was, so... I think we're gonna try to go to Talladega in April.
Jesus, you just want to hit all these shitty races, don't you?
Well, I mean, they're
well, Dega's its own thing, man. Talladega's its own thing.
It's for the overall experience when you go to Dega.
For sure, yeah.
But also, Andy's friend Marlo went with us, and he brought his son, who's like, I want to say like 4, and it was his first race ever. So watching them have like that bonding moment of taking their son to the first race ever, and then that finish, he was like, oh man, that's an all-time highlight that they're gonna show forever. And he's like, I can always say, hey, that was your first race. So that was cool. That was special.
Yeah, I mean, all day Saturday, I was like, yep, I don't regret skipping this trip. And even the beginning of the race Sunday, I said, yep, I'm very happy with my choice. And then at the end, I was like, ugh. Man, I missed a good one. But as we'll get to, I had reasons for staying home, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But
one more, I went with my brother, who we've both grown up together watching NASCAR our entire lives, and Suarez, like, he's a huge Chase fan, but Suarez is also, like, that's his number two guy. He was there with a Suarez shirt, so getting that experience with my brother, getting to see one of his favorite drivers win for the first time for him was also really special. So
that's cool. One thing we do got to talk about before we move on from the Atlanta talk here is there was a little incident in that race between a couple of interested parties here the show here.
Oh yeah.
I forgot all about that.
I didn't. So it was stage three. We're getting pretty close to the end, pretty much when you don't really want that to happen, fortunately.
Chase had already had, like, such an up-and-down day, like, coming from the back and doing repairs all day. I was like,
and from where
Christ.
I was sitting, it looked just looked like, you know, Ross Chastain just fucking drove straight through the nine.
Rossed him real good.
Sent him off into whatever the next county in Georgia is, you know.
Hey, listen, a lot of guys were talking about how once their front end got lifted a bit with the draft, they couldn't turn too well. So maybe that's what happened. I don't know. I just was like, as soon as I saw that, I texted Rob. I was like, fuck, gonna be a good show
this week, so. Tuesday, yeah. But I enjoyed that.
Going back to the merch haulers, you know, Chase is like the only one that has his own like specific merch hauler.
Yeah.
But yesterday and Sunday, whatever fucking day it is, I noticed that Chastain had his own merch hauler. It was just him.
Yeah,
I've been inside.
I saw that on Twitter.
I went and looked inside, and it was only half Chastain, and the rest of it was Chevy merch, Team Chevy stuff, and there wasn't much of a line, so I stopped feeling a type of way about it.
I guess you gotta try, you know. I'm sure he's getting a bump from the Netflix series, and he's the guy now.
Looking Busch Light stuff in there, so yeah, that stuff sells.
Just wait till the watermelon comes out. He's gone. It's off to the races with merch sales.
He should sell watermelons filled with vodka or something out of his haul.
You gotta dump Busch Light in them.
He's the pick of like an Everclear, like a 99 watermelon sponsorship or something. You know,
that does not work, Rob. You can't mix alcohol brands like that. They don't like that.
I know they don't, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe Busch, if they ever...
You want that. You just want 99 bananas to sponsor a car so you have somebody to pull for.
Fuck,
that's
yes,
all you
I
want.
Do. Absolutely.
Correct. Sponsor BJ.
Mm-hmm. See? Oh, that'd be sick. BJ would need 99 skulls.
Yeah, they would have to figure out something new for him. 99, like black licorice or something like that.
Yep. let's talk about a couple of the reactions though from this race. So obviously the finish was one of the closest of all time, and Kyle Busch, after the race, he finished third, posted something on Instagram saying he just needed a few more inches and he would have had it. And his lovely wife Samantha commented with I'll paraphrase because I don't remember off the top of my head. She's like, I've been telling you only need a couple more inches for 20 years now. So nice little good pervert joke from that weird family, because, you know, we all know they post ridiculous shit and
it's such a perfect deep jab to put on the internet.
Yes,
you know,
to your own husband.
They did have
apparently not very deep.
Yeah, not deep enough. Yeah. You know, they did have issues. Samantha had issues getting pregnant and all that. They were very open about IVF and all that, and for her to come out there with the bomb and just level his ass. By the way, Kyle Busch leading the points. I don't know if anyone's noticed that or anyone cares about the points anymore, but he's up
not
top.
Not yet. It's too early.
And also Bubba Wallace in the top five? Or two
only,
top fives?
Only driver with two top fives.
Yeah,
only
he's
one.
Also so. In the top five in points, I believe. Maybe sixth at the most. I don't know, but he's up there.
Yeah.
Interesting setup.
Mm-hmm. Hendrick
is third in points. Wow.
Yeah, he did really well too. He's another one that like
take that, Corey LaJoy.
Yeah. Austin did his best to kill everybody past two weekends though.
Yeah, he did. He was driving pretty reckless there.
We actually
a jackass.
speaking of, that is one thing that we didn't mention. There is Corey was shit talking Austin a little bit on his podcast and like Silver Spoon stuff and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's like, motherfucker,
what's
hey,
your
you're
last
the,
name?
You're the Yeah, what exactly? What's your last name? And second off, how many races has Austin actually won, and how many races have you fucking won, pal?
Yeah.
You
can, and you a can championship. Be
Yeah. In his defense, yeah. I've been banned from the LaJoy of seating hospitality at the World Finals. They actually, you know, they're pretty blue collar. I'll give it to them. Mm-hmm. So, like, the Silver Spoon, Austin Cindric's dad is Tim Cindric. They have more money than mm-hmm. Christ himself, who doesn't really believe in money. If you actually read the Bible, he flipped a bunch of tables at the temple when they were doing some money changing shit for all you Christians out there. But yeah, I the LaJoys are well off. There's legacy there, but you know, it's still not totally unwarranted, but still, like, shut the fuck up. Please. The Chili's commercial wasn't that funny. Come on, like, not enough to give them that much credence.
Another thing from the race, I know on the Netflix series, age-old question of do you guys pee in your driver's suit in the car was answered when we saw Tyler Reddick, his pissed driver's suit. Denny Hamlin on his podcast this week talked about having to finally do it. He's never done it before.
Yeah.
And he talked about the struggle with it, which I totally understand. Like, I've never pissed myself on purpose. I've never really pissed myself ever, now that I mention it. I'm not drunk, whatever. I've never done it. But
it's good save, Brian.
Yeah. I've never pissed myself. But to think of having to try to piss yourself, I mean, yeah, there's mental, physical block there. You just, it's hard to do. So he talked about how he had to do it and had to do it, and eventually, like, that last pit stop, he finally did it. And the big reveal was that he kind of liked it. And that is...
Of course he fucking did. Yeah.
Very, very strange thing to admit publicly. But, yeah, he enjoyed pissing himself, so hopefully he does it every week now, and maybe that'll change his luck. Who knows?
We'll have to set up a pee corner over at 2311. Yeah, the merch from that. Oh my god.
Get some FedEx branded piss bottles, piss jugs for the
gray sweatpants.
Fire suit more than your favorite driver.
I pissed my fire suit more than your favorite driver did.
And I'll let you cover this one. You got a note here about IROC, which I'm not incredibly excited about it. So Rob, you can take the lead on this one.
Oh yeah, so a little bit more information coming out from Ray Everingham about the future of the IROC brand. Of course, he bought that. He was on Dale Jr. Download and kind of opened up a lot about his involvement with SRX and what made him leave and all that, and sort of what pushed him to pick up the IROC name and sort of chase that legacy. Apparently, he's going to be trying to restore a bunch of the old IROC cars and run exhibition races with those, which again, it's not the same spirit as SRX or what IROC was originally, but it's perfectly on brand for Ray, and I'm really curious to see what this project turns into. How fucking sick would it be to watch some of those old Camaros rip around, or those old Pontiacs rip around, as an exhibition for a cup race or at your local short track?
Pontiac? Like, motherfucker, it's an IROC series. It's a Chevy IROC.
Sorry, Chevy. Yeah, I'm saying all kinds of brands here, but... well, the IROC, back in the day, they ran Porsches and shit like that, too, so it was a little different in the 70s and 80s. I don't know exactly what era. I could probably read the article in full again and see what he's talking about, but yeah, some of those old cars are going to be restored.
He made it sound like Camaros in the interview.
Camaros, yeah.
I can't say I'm excited about this, but I'll check it out if it comes to fruition. I mean, I wasn't incredibly excited about SRX, and that turned out to be what it was. And there's still the whole thing of if a race doesn't really matter, like, it's just entertainment, and I like races to count, but again, I'll check it out if it happens. So
yeah, again, it's for me, it's less about racing and more just about seeing some cool vintage cars on a racetrack built back up to the spec that they originally built to. So hopefully that works out. It'd be a nice little exhibition thing. I'd love to see it at Stafford again. SRX down there was pretty cool. I share some of the same concerns as you, Brian, but I'm very excited to see what this turns into, and hopefully it's something we all want to see. So
yeah. Let's see, there are a couple media-related things, too, to talk about. First, we'll talk about the good thing. The trailer was released today for Lionheart, which is was it HBO it's going to be on? HBO documentary about Dan Weldon?
Yeah, HBO
documentary. The trailer was a tearjerker.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really fucking good.
Any racing documentary that comes out these days, I'll watch immediately. And, you know, not that I was an IndyCar fan during this period. But I was aware of Dan Weldon, aware of his death. So, yeah, I mean, of course I'll be watching this. I'm very excited to check it out. That'll be out March 12th, I believe.
Yeah, so. The story, of course, for the, anyone listening who doesn't know about Dan Weldon, he's a fantastically talented IndyCar driver. Won 2 Indianapolis 500s, got a kart championship, not kart, IndyCar championship in the mid-2000s. Unfortunately passed away at Vegas. And now his son is go-kart racing and following in his footsteps. So it seems like this series is kind of a two-part, you know, or two-chapter story of one of Dan's racing career and then one of his son's racing career, all centering around his wife, who has to put up with this shit again. So
yeah,
it's a very, very heavy story, and I'm glad to see that this is getting this level of treatment and this level of respect. It looks fucking awesome. Again, the trailer, just watch the trailer. It's fucking incredible. And again, like, you want to talk about crossover value here to people who might not be racing fans. Like, just the way this thing is shot, or it seems to be, I think that'll, and the story itself is just incredible. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and that was a tough time for IndyCar fans, but it's definitely cool to see his son following in his dad's footsteps. I'm curious to see how that turns out. He just won some championship in the Indy ladder with
good
karts and all that. So he's gonna do it. He's trying to do it.
Cool. And moving on to more media feedback. So, you know, obviously we talked a lot about the Netflix series and how well that's been doing and how good it is for NASCAR. Apparently somebody else, though, was not a huge fan of the series, or at the very least the swearing involved in the series. Eddie Gossage, the former president of Texas Motor Speedway, I think that was his title. I mean, he was in charge of Texas for the most part, but
yeah, he definitely ruined it. And
yeah, he definitely did a wonderful job. Definitely want to listen to what this touchhole fucking has to say about the sport. Yeah, he bitched about how there's too much swearing in the series. Like, motherfucker, about 99% of NASCAR media content is family friendly. Let one fucking thing be even a tiny bit adult oriented with this sport and have something that shows some reality to it. I mean, God forbid, it's not like they said fuck a handful of times. Like, that's what you're complaining about?
It was mostly Denny.
Yeah, it was mostly Denny, but again, there were like that, all this stuff, the good stuff that's come from this series, and you want to pull some family friendly bullshit. And he says himself, like, I think he said something to the effect of, like, people who use that type of language are, like, not stupid, but, like, just something demeaning to people who swear at all. And it's like, that's anybody who has that sort of tone and thinks that, like, people who use cuss words are unintelligent, like, nope, just get the fuck out of here.
Fuck you.
Like, yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, my favorite reaction to all of this was from a strange bedfellow, Brett Griffin, again, getting a thumbs up from all of us.
Yeah.
He responds with, that's an out-of-touch comment, Eddie. At 14, you were saying it, so was I. And then Joel Edmonds, which is Eric Almirola's spotter, he pops in and says, coming from the guy that had the worst traffic in all of racing with an interstate a quarter of a mile away.
Just
kudos, that, boys.
That, and there was also about 700,000 people telling him to fuck off, like, just straight swearing at him. So, which is me also.
We tried the family friendly thing. It's all over the broadcast. It's everywhere. You know, let's try something else. You know,
not everything has to be for children. And I hate that. There's so
maybe
many
we should
things
just put
like
some
that.
PJ1 on the swearing. You know, just really slather that shit on all the cussing, and maybe that'll help people speak better. Just putting some PJ1 on it and knocking turns 1 and 2 down to be flat as a parking lot. So yeah, whatever. What do I know? Fuck it. Let's turn it into a super speedway. Let's go. Bye.
Yep.
Give me something to cuss about.
And I guess let's the DAR for the week. You know, Rob, you pretty much wrote down everybody who was bringing up F1 versus NASCAR in after this race. And
yes,
I mean, as a NASCAR guy, it's hard not to say stuff like that, and it's hard not to, like, throw it in the faces of people that, like, think they're superior fans because they watch a Netflix series and have watched 3 years of F1.
I'm just saying, like, just shut up. Just don't. Don't take the bait. Who cares? Like, they're not going to watch NASCAR based off of this anyway, I don't think. You know, like, they're already watching F1. They got their own thing they're into, like, they're going to come over here, and in 3 weeks, they're going to get bored because there is a fucking 5-second lead at Vegas or whatever the next track is. You know? So I don't know. Just don't engage with that shit. that sort of elitism sucks. There's no reason to be an asshole about it. As a guy who's spent the entire show complaining about stuff, you know, I understand this is pot calling the kettle black moment here, but like, come on. I'm not here to like yuck anybody's yum, as my wife would say. Pretty good, right?
I haven't heard that one.
So just like, let these people figure it out on their own, and let's enjoy this thing we have that people are tuned into now. Because there is a certain truth that fans are going to come over based off shit like this and check it out. And the more that people are dickheads online or whatever,
it doesn't help.
It doesn't help. So like, just let's, if we all agree this is the best thing on, you know, big television besides IndyCar, which is hardly on big television anymore. But, you know, this is what people know as racing in the U.S. Let's be a nice enough fan base to let them all in and not be an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just that's, dude, all of you are my DAR for the week. Just fucking turn your monitor off, close the laptop for 20 seconds, and then we'll see you again next week.
Yeah. So, Rob, it doesn't look like there was a whole – I know there was a little bit of stuff going on in the short track septic tank this weekend, but there wasn't as much racing as the last few weeks, right?
No, it's we're kind of getting back into the usual routine. Of course, the weekends are going to be heavy. Smart Tour is coming up this weekend. There's a Cars race. World of Outlaws are at Volusia. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But, you know, the weeks are mostly bare now. The big show, of course, this past week was down at Golden Isle Speedway in Georgia. What is that, like 3 hours away from Atlanta?
Three or four. It's way south Georgia. It's like a different,
because
country down there.
When I was like kind of throwing around the idea of maybe coming to Atlanta, I was like, ooh, I can go see this high limit Lucas Oil show they're throwing down there. And then I realized just how it's pretty much in the Atlantic Ocean. So
it's basically Florida.
Yeah, exactly. It changed my mind.
We don't claim it.
You don't claim it.
Yeah.
Well, this is another reason why I was kind of, you know, sent me into my little boomer fit here over plate racing. Was that the racing at Golden Isle over the weekend was just so good. Of course, High Limit and Lucas Oil Late Models had a big doubleheader down there. Thursday night show, not all that well attended. You know, it was a fine race. But, you know, Saturday night was the real big show. Jacob Allen finally returning to Victory Lane. He's a big favorite of a lot of our friends here on the show. And he didn't have a great year last year. And it's nice to see him back in Victory Lane. And that battle between Tyler Courtney and Justin Peck at the end of that race was fucking awesome, and he whooped him with authority, and it was great to see that. So congrats to Jacob Allen and the Shark Racing guys. I loved that. I was so stoked. And then Mike Marler taking a big win in the late model feature after that. I thought Brandon Shepherd was going to get it, but the track rubbered off, and you know, the first 35 laps were great, but the last 15 were kind of whatever, you know. Once it rubbers off, there's not a ton you can do. But Mike Marler getting a big win there. Two great races at a great racetrack. Again, just shout out to Jacob Allen. I'm wearing the hat right now. I haven't taken it off since that happened, so it was fucking awesome. Also, shout out to Troy Waugman for winning the icebreaker at Lincoln. PA sprint season is sort of opening with that.
It always blows my mind they start in February.
It's fucking okay. Nuts, dude. They call it the icebreaker. Every race up north is called the icebreaker when they open the track because it's either 70 degrees or it's like 15. It was somewhere in between for this one, and it definitely looked cold. But, yeah, a good show between him and Danny Dietrich and Freddie Reimer and all those guys. It's always cool to see PA sprint season open up. And I think that's just about it for the septic tank. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff coming up this weekend on Flow, sprinkled throughout your cup action and Xfinity action and truck action. And is ARCA in Vegas? Who knows?
I don't know.
Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, I don't know either.
Who cares?
Gus Dean's going to Vegas. Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on Flow. Again, World of Outlaws are turning to Volusia. That'll be a good show. Cars Tour, Smart Modifieds, all sorts of shit. So, make sure you watch it. Now we can flush the septic tank down here.
So normally at this point in the show, we get onto our video of the week segment, but because the video of the week is about racing collectibles and I had sort of a racing collectibles type trip this past weekend, yep. We're going to talk about that first. So if you listened last week, you caught me at the end talking about how I had I don't know if I mentioned it was an estate sale, but I had a sale to go to, and I, you know, not that we have many listeners, if any at all, in Detroit, but you know, you got to kind of play this stuff close to the vest sometimes. But
yeah.
I had found an estate sale for a former Chevy marketing executive. His name is Wes Yoakam Jr.
he had a lot of involvement in NASCAR in the 80s and 90s. And I found this estate sale, and, you know, that he had his basement filled with all sorts of photos and diecasts and all this stuff. And there were boxes and boxes of hats and some shirts and stuff. Now, I'm sure Ashley gets this too, and Ashley is going to be able to commiserate with me a bit here because her and I both do this. But, you know, we get questions. How do we get the stuff that we get? How do we find this stuff? And, you know, yeah, it's flea markets. It's estate sales. It's garage sales. It's thrift stores. It's all these things. But yeah, with estate sales, compared to all the rest, that stuff can kind of be just luck. Estate sales tend to take a bit more planning. You know, I have my websites that I go to find them, and that's how I found this one living in Cleveland. It was 3 hours away. And when you find a good estate sale, you have to get there early. When I say early, I don't mean 8 o'clock if the doors open at 9. I'm talking about you get there at the crack of dawn and sit there for 3 hours waiting to get in line. That's what I've had to do at all my best estate sales. Yeah. And that's what I had to do for this one, because I knew, like, with all the racing clothing and stuff, I knew there was going to be other people there looking out for this stuff. Yeah, as Ashley likes to call them, the whippersnappers, because, you know, if you follow my business at all, yes, I sell a lot of racing collectibles, like racing clothing, but I also sell all types of vintage clothing. And, you know, we've talked about it before. NASCAR stuff is pretty popular within vintage and streetwear communities. So at these types of sales, you're going to get a lot of those types of kids who don't know shit about racing, but they know racing stuff is worth money. So you have to kind of fight with them for this stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, this particular sale, I'd spoken to the proprietor ahead of time and kind of gotten ideas to what I'd have to bring money-wise, and they didn't release the address until 7 o'clock in the morning. So I drove up to Detroit. I left my house at 3:30, got there before 7, was waiting in the town for the address to be released, get it at 7 o'clock, jeez, head over there. I'm 11th in line. What? Stupid me.
Wow.
Well, listen to this. So I have done this before, so I'm very upset at myself for not thinking to do this. In the listing, you could see the guy's name on all sorts of shit. So what these kids did was they looked up the guy's name, found the house that had been sold, and found the address. So they were already there. So I already had kids in front of me in line. Savvy, for the
fucking whippersnappers.
So I had a couple hours to go get lunch and kind of re-strategize, like, okay, how's this gonna work? Because in the photo, it only looked like there was a couple hundred hats, you know, like, and there were a handful of shirts, other shit. There were a bunch of things that I was going up there to get that weren't clothing, and I'll talk about those in a minute. Let's talk about the entrance. So I had actually made friends with a guy right in front of me in line, who, he was another reseller, not a NASCAR guy, but he was older, and you know, we were kind of talking about what we did. And he wanted some of the hats, but he wanted to pay like $2 each for them. And we were willing to work together to kind of like, oh, let's find the stuff we want. When the doors opened, all the vintage kids, we all ran down to the basement, and, you know, there was 15, 20 shirts maybe. And the one kid got them all. He got a couple windbreakers, which were cool, but again, with these kids not knowing racing, they got some, like, a New Hampshire windbreaker that's worth like $40. Meanwhile, on the rack, there is a brand new Jeff Bodine Hendrick team issued Levi Garrett jacket.
That thing's
from like 86.
Fucking nuts, yeah, dude.
That's worth a lot more than any of the shit they got.
And it's just cool as shit.
I mean, brown and gold are not my colors, so I'm not keeping it. But to someone who does like that, they'll enjoy it.
Would you rather wear that, or would you rather wear a 90s windbreaker?
I'd rather wear the Jeff Bodine jacket, of course, but the thing is, I already have a bunch of jackets like that from, like, drivers I like that aren't brown. Right. So
the problem here is that it's Jeff Bodine.
So. Yeah, the problem is Jeff Bodine.
That's the number one problem here.
So in addition to that, so when we thought there were like 200 hats, there were thousands of hats. Like this guy, he had to have been the guy in Victory Lane that was giving the Chevy hats to people, because there were boxes and boxes of hats from, like, they had the Chevy bow tie, but they said Indianapolis 89 or Daytona 90 or
you said they're like generic with no winners on them, right? It just
no winner, just there were the hats that you won. Here, you know, it this was before they made like driver specific merch, before the title was actually claimed, you know, like
right,
So that's what this guy did. Now, again, I talk about how a lot of the kids got the hats and stuff. And once all of us vintage kids got down there and we realized, oh, there's thousands of hats. We don't have to fight. We just kind of all took our time and we were trading hats out and stuff. I got a couple that people had doubles of and it ended up being okay. But the stuff that they didn't get, which is what I was there for, was the really cool shit. Like, for instance, I noticed a inaugural Brickyard 400 Chevy poster, beautifully framed in this. I mean, I say beautiful in the sense that it's a white frame with purple and yellow matting to match the color of the graphic. But signed by all the big name Chevy guys from 94. So it's got Earnhardt, Waltrip, Dale Jarrett, Kenny Schrader, Jeff Gordon.
Holy shit, dude.
All authentic for $45.
Fuck you. Oh,
wow. That's awesome. That's so in talking to the guy that was putting on the estate sale, like, he knew the hats were worth money. He knew there was going to be people like us resellers who were there to get them, but it's all the other shit. He had no idea what he had. So, like, mm-hmm. I thought when I saw that in the listing, I was like, that's probably gonna be like $100-$200. And if it's that price, I'll probably still get it. When I saw 45, yeah, like, immediately yanked that fucker off the wall.
Amazing, dude.
What else did I get? So, you know, he had a bunch of plaques from, like, he had some sort of involvement with the Venturini team in the Arca series in the 80s and 90s. So he had all these, like, plaques from when the team won titles. I grabbed all those for next to nothing. There's a Native American Kachina doll that was given to him by Phoenix Raceway.
So sick,
as, like,
dude,
a ceremonial thing. Got that.
That's so cool.
Boxes and boxes of, like, promotional tapes, like, recorded races, commercials, marketing material that never made it to the public eye. Like, stuff that if you were a race fan like me, there were no other race people there. That's the thing. It was all just people looking to buy shit. The only other people that I saw that were very clearly race fans were this older couple that all they did was spend, like, an hour searching through the programs and got, like, a couple boxes of programs. They got nothing else. It was very strange. So, yeah, I got all this really unique shit that you'll never see again. And If you have an estate sale in your area where you see this type of stuff, like, again, plan ahead, take your time, and take a day off, because you might not get a shirt you want, but if there's some other cool, unique shit, there's a very good chance you can snatch it up, because don't know what they have.
That's usually how it goes. Like, there's that initial, like, mad rush where all the whippersnappers are grabbing, you know, that shit, and then as soon as they're done, they leave, and then you have time to, like, go through all the cool shit that they actually ignored and left behind.
I'm over here complaining about NASCAR because it's not the same as it was 20 years ago. You guys are calling kids whippersnappers. We are a boomer podcast. What the fuck has happened?
Number one boomer related racing podcast.
So, Brian, what was your favorite piece? Was it that Jeff Bodine jacket, or was there something else that really?
I mean, as definitely the Brickyard poster was my favorite. But there were some
Native
other
American
things.
Native American artifacts.
I mean, the artifact was cool. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'll probably just keep it because it's such a weird thing. I did ask my friend Marissa. Hi, Marissa. I know you're listening. She's the only person that I know that has, like, Native American heritage. I mean, I'm sure probably some other people do, but they don't talk about it. But she's open about it. And I sent it to her, and she did a little research. And she's like, yeah, there are a bunch of tribes out there, so it makes sense as to why he was given that.
I think it's Apache. I think that's, like, Apache dress, if I'm not mistaken. I'm from around there, so I see a lot of the pottery and art like that growing up, and it looks, I think it's Apache, but I'm not 100% sure. Still,
I did cool stuff. Yeah, I did a little research, but I couldn't find an exact match. But I mean, there's just shit. Like, there was this one photo, again, another beautifully matted, like, color matted, like, to match the truck. But there was a GMC and Chevy did these super high performance, like, mini trucks, like mini S10s and Blazers, and I think this was a concept one, and he just, this gorgeous photo for like $5, and it's like 8 pounds, it's huge, and, like, I had to have that, you know, like, why the fuck not?
But
I mean, the Brickyard 400 poster was the best. However, there was one other thing that I gotta talk about real quick, and for those listening who are monster truck fans, you'll get a kick out of this. So obviously, Chevy had some involvement in the monster truck world, and there were a few monster truck things at this event. And one of the VHS tapes I found was just a blank recorded tape that just said Barefoot on it. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck this is, but I'm taking it.
Foot fetish.
So I bring it home.
Foot video, 98.
Well, I mean, there's a risk. There's a risk of that. But no, what it turned out to be... the other way of spelling bear.
I love how your brain worked in this situation, though. Like, good context clues, you know, the risk was worth it, right?
Yeah. From what I can gather, this was basically a demo tape that Scott Hess. Now, for the real monster truck historians, they know this, but Fred Schaefer was the original owner of Barefoot. But in 89-90, he licensed the name to a guy named Scott Hess, who was another monster truck driver, and he campaigned his own Barefoot. And he must have sent this demo tape to Chevy, and it's just like 15-20 minutes of sideline shot monster truck racing from untelevised events and like trucks you never saw on TV. So I posted a 5-second clip of this in one of the old school monster truck Facebook groups I'm in. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people commenting on it and excited to see this footage. So I'm waiting on my cable to hook up to my computer to transfer it. But I'll be posting that at some point. I don't know if it's something we'll dive into on the show because, again, it's just 15 minutes of footage. But us old school monster truck fans, like, love stuff like that because there was so much monster truck racing and events that went on in the 80s and 90s that were never on TV. So to see stuff like this and trucks that you never saw race on TV, this is gold to us. So that was, aside from the Brickyard poster, that was probably my best thing I found.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I think that pretty much wraps up this part of the merchandise talk. Moving on to our video of the week, though.
Video of the week. I gotta make some sort of intro for that. That'll have to do for now.
We watched a couple clips from Pawn Stars of a couple different NASCAR items that were brought into the show, and I thought there were more items that were shown, but I only found like 6 clips, and we're showing 4 here because one of them had Joey Logano in it, and I don't really care, and the other one was like a minute long clip of a Paul Newman fire suit. So I picked out 4 videos. Damn. Here, 2 involving Dale Earnhardt and 1 Ryan Newman and 1 Richard Petty. So first up, we get a Dale Earnhardt driver suit from the 1993 Coca-Cola 600. Now, back in the day, you know, before the internet existed and before eBay and all these other ways to find stuff, a lot of race used items were given away to like charity auctions and things like that. And that's how this guy got this particular driver suit. And in the clip, I mean, it's very clearly authentic. I mean, he's got all the Chevy certificate of authenticity, and it's you know, very clearly Dale's suit, and there's really no argument as to that part of it.
No piss stains or anything like that.
You know, there's no piss stains that you can see, but maybe they're there.
Back when men were men and they just fucking held it.
But anyway, so this guy, when they, you know, they ask how much he wants to get for it, and he asks, he says $100,000. Now, folks,
I gotta sit down.
Now, while I'm not a huge collector of race use items, I have a few, and from what I know, the collector market, I don't think there is a fire suit that has ever gone for anywhere near 6 figures. I would say maybe the 2001 Dale fire suit, that might have gone for 6 figures if anybody ever sold that. And maybe a couple other really, really rare ones. But most average driver fire suits, you know, they might go from anywhere from $500 to a couple grand. Admittedly, something with an Earnhardt name on it, whether it be Dale or Dale Jr., somebody like Jeff Gordon, you know, the top guys, yeah, you're going to spend $5,000 to $10,000 for a good fire suit. But 100 is insane. And
yeah,
this guy,
I feel like this guy had some debts or something that.
Yeah, I don't know what this guy's story was, but they have some expert come in and, you know, verify it's all legit and whatnot, and the guy, even after the guy says that's worth about $20,000, the guy still insists I want $85,000 for this fucking thing.
Well,
and it's just like, yeah, all right, bud, well, you will never ever get that. Like, it's never gonna happen. In 100 years you probably won't get $100,000 for that. So good luck. Moving on to the next clip, another fire suit.
Oh, real quick, on the Dale fire suit. there was a little infographic that popped across the screen here about Dale, and it said he was born in 1951, but he was killed instantly in a collision during the final lap of the 2001 Indy 500.
Yeah, they get their facts all sorts of fucked up on this, and they really just learned a couple remedial things.
So maybe this shit is worth $100,000. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Sort of parallel universe.
Yeah.
The next fire suit deal is a little more reasonable. So this guy brings in a Ryan Newman fire suit from the early either 2002 or 2003 that he says he found in a warehouse that he was cleaning out and just brought it home with him, which is a likely story. And he brings it in. He's like, I see these going for like $2,500 online all the time. And I forget what he was trying to get. I think he was trying to get $1,000 for it.
Yeah.
So yeah. The Pawn Stars guys, they have somebody at the store that's a NASCAR fan. So he comes over and he authenticates it. And right off the bat, he annoys me with, you see this Alltel logo? They change it after 2005, so it's got to be at least before 2005. Dipshit, it's also got a Winston Cup logo on it, so that means it's at least... it's at least 2003, so yeah. Who the fuck cares about Alltel, you moron? Newman was only driving from 01 to 03 in Winston Cup, so it's got to be from one of those couple years.
I feel like these guys were really shitting on Newman, too. They're like, man, well,
oh, yeah, they were.
Like,
yeah. Well, I got a line at the end, I'll say.
Well, when was this show
I didn't get the dates.
Because there was a time where you could probably shit on Newman a little bit.
Well, they mentioned he won the 08 500, so it was at least after that.
Right. Yeah.
Now the this NASCAR expert that they have there, he also says, "Oh, the gloves don't match. They can't be authentic." Like, I don't know if you've seen drivers' gloves. They're not all like color matched and uniform matched. Like a lot of them are just plain ass white gloves.
Yeah. Especially
in those
days.
The gloves look worn.
Yeah.
I mean. To me, I they seemed authentic to me, so I argued with that. The guy says it was worth $600, which honestly isn't that bad of a price. It's probably undervalued now, I would say. Now you could probably get $1,000, $1,200. I mean, Newman, he's not a legend, but he's a Daytona 500 winner. He's a cup, you know, he's won tons of races. You know, he's a well-known driver. He's not up there at Petty Gordon levels, but... He's still worth at least $1,000.
Rocket Man.
Yeah.
But what the Pawn Stars' son, I forget their fucking names, but he goes, it's not Dale Earnhardt. It's not Dale Earnhardt. It's not Tony Stewart. It's Ryan Newman. There's your shitting on Newman part.
Yeah, not wrong.
But he ended up getting $450 for it. He really held his line at $450. And he got it for free anyway, so all's well that ends well with that one.
Speaking of Ryan Newman, he is running the full Smart Modified Tour. So if you're a Ryan Newman fan out there who is just angered at how little respect we're laying on his name right now, you can still watch him race, and he'll be racing this Saturday. So
there you go.
Nice.
Next up is a guy with a Richard Petty replica 1984 Pontiac. Is that Le Mans or Grand Prix? I forget which model that was that they were driving in 84.
Wasn't paying attention.
Regardless, it's an 84 Pontiac. And this guy, what he did was he took a street car and he built it into a replica. And when I say a street car into a replica, he didn't just put stickers on a fucking old Buick. He, like, the body panels were fabricated. It's got a cage. It's the interior's done up. It's definitely put some money and time into it. It's still a street legal car. It's not a fucking cup car that you put lights on.
Right.
But he says he got Petty's car builder to help build this, which he didn't say his name. I don't know what the fuck that means. But, I mean, the car looks fine. The neon orange decals are kind of fading, which is pretty standard for those decals. They didn't really hold up too well, even back in the day. But this was an episode where apparently they were on the road, I guess. This was like a fucking Pawn Stars road trip, so...
Me and Andy were watching this earlier, and we recognized where they started out at was right behind the Winston Cup Museum in Salem.
Makes total sense. So they drive it down to the Petty Museum, and of course Richard comes out, and... let me look at my notes here real quick.
I just pulled the video up here on my TV down here. Yeah. That is a Grand Prix, so...
Okay, there we go. This guy wanted $125,000 for this car. Now, fully, like, straight off the track with the original motors cars in them, don't go for that much. Like, six figures for this type of car is batshit insane. Like, I don't know how much he spent on this car building it up, but the fact that he thought he could get six figures for it shows how completely delusional this fucking guy is.
You can't even get a Dale Earnhardt fire suit for that money if you ask some people.
Exactly. But all they had Richard do, they had Richard come out and like look at the car, and he's like, yep, I definitely signed that, and that was it. And then
classic.
Send him back inside like some old
wheeled him off on the dolly. Yeah.
Now somehow the Pawn Stars guys still wanted to try to buy this car, and they offered him 90 for it, and the guy still wouldn't take it. So I want to kind of look up. I didn't get a chance to look up and see if this car still exists or if the guy still has it or what.
That's pretty good.
I mean, I would take that, but again, I don't know what he paid for it. So
yeah, but that's racing, you know. Spend a lot of money to get just a little bit back. So
exactly.
Authentic NASCAR experience for this guy.
And the final one is probably the funniest clip of all of them. So this guy brings in a Dale Earnhardt autographed tire. Now, here's where it gets a little bit funny to me. So he says his wife got this tire at a collectible shop, and then he went and sent the tire out to have Dale sign it, which, one, that's got to cost a lot of money. Even, 20 years ago, that was a lot of money. Two, I don't think that was a thing that you did. Like, I know people sent cards and hero cards out, but I can't think of any time where I heard somebody sending a tire off to get signed. That's something you go to a meet and greet and have done in front of you. Tires are just too big and heavy to mail and get shipped out. I don't know why you'd risk that.
Yeah.
But that's what he says he did.
Maybe he had a shipping hookup. Maybe he had some kind of deal.
Who knows? Yeah. But,
I don't know about that.
So he brings the tire in, and right off the bat, they're shitting on this guy's certificate of authenticity. Now, I'll say this because I had, when I bought the Kyle Petty Coors Light hood that I picked up a few years ago, that's what I traded my Ernie Irvin door for. A couple things I got from the older folks that had this stuff, one of them was a Jeff Gordon tire from that same shop with that exact same certificate of authenticity. Going back to what I said about race use items being sold off to charity auctions, there are still to this day, and it was this way back in the 90s and even now 2024, there are still shops in the Carolina, Charlotte area that end up working with these race teams and getting some of this race use shit and reselling it. So they shit on the certificate immediately, whereas and you can even go online right now. When I was looking up Dale Earnhardt tires, I found a couple sold examples for $300 with that same certificate.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a real thing. It was a real shop. So they shit on that immediately, and then they immediately start questioning the signature. And they bring this – he's not another non-NASCAR guy, but a forensic calligraphist. I don't know if that was the title, but he was someone that, like, studies signatures and studies handwriting and things like that for forensic purposes. And he's analyzing this signature, and he's talking about the swoops of Dale's signatures. And I will say one thing that I've learned from the collecting community is that Dale and many of these drivers have different signatures for different moments. Like, say if you caught Dale on pit row and he's walking to his hauler or something, and you get him to sign something, it's not going to look like his big swoopy, you know, fancy signature that he puts on his, you know, products and things like that. It's going to be just kind of a scribbled Dale. This was none of those things. This was a nice big signature. I will admit it didn't necessarily look authentic. And the guy said, the Earnhardt is too far off to the left and this should be here. The one thing that I didn't agree with is he said, I've never seen a signature with a 3 at the end of it, which I have seen those. So that's bullshit. This guy wanted $1,500 for this tire, and it was a dud. They told him it was fake and he left with nothing. So
I think they just didn't want to buy a tire that day.
Yeah.
What bothered me was while the expert was looking at the signature, he was like aggressively rubbing his greasy fingers like through this signature. I was like,
yeah,
not
great.
It's I don't know. It
it's weird to see NASCAR collectibles like this in non-NASCAR settings, and to me, that's why I wanted to pick this stuff, because I wanted to see how they would analyze it. And, you know, those guys, pawn shop guys in general are dicks. Like, I don't, out of all these... all these collectible shows that were popular in this era, like, I love American Pickers. I was a big fan of the Storage Wars. I never liked Pawn Stars. These guys were always assholes. Never liked them. So to see them kind of go at some of this stuff, at least the tire was funny. The other ones were just whatever, but yeah. I don't know. I just got a kick out of it, and I wanted to talk about racing collectibles in the show, so... yeah, I don't know if you guys enjoy this as much as I did.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah, and it's always cool to see NASCAR stuff pop up in places where you don't typically see it. So
right. Yeah,
in front of people who don't really care about NASCAR.
Yeah, also that
they have to bring in from their Rolodex of experts.
Listen, call me next time, fuckers. I'll help you out.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the video of the week. And next week, you know, we are going to be in, NASCAR's going to be in Phoenix. Or no, Phoenix.
Nope.
They're in Las Vegas this week. Next week's show, they're going to be in Phoenix. So yeah. For the video of the week next week, it doesn't happen anymore. But for 20 something years, Phoenix hosted a race called the Copper World Classic, which
amazing.
It was a bunch of different types of cars. Like there'd be trucks, there'd be super modifieds, ASA, like all sorts of different series would show up, and it'd be like a big long, I don't know if it was a week or a weekend, but a bunch of different races would happen at once. And it doesn't happen anymore, but it was a big West Coast race for many years. And I found a little 20-minute super modified race that we're gonna watch, something different. I feel like we might have watched one super modified clip last year. I can't remember, but just something different. We've watched enough NASCAR stuff already this year, so that'll be on the playlist by the time you listen to this. And it's a good watch. I will say it's got a big red flag in it, but it's also got a lot of interviews with drivers, so it's worth checking out. So that'll be on the playlist.
And if you've never seen what a super modified looks like, get ready, folks. These things are fucking sick.
Yeah, they are so wild sick. Fucking cars. And Slap Shoes, oh, you know, we've talked about him plenty of times. He actually did kind of like a what the hell is a super modified video. So check his page if you want a little bit of education before you watch this video, because the cars are insane looking and they're very cool.
Yeah, the shows they put on, especially these days, they definitely aren't as entertaining as other races on the car when you go see them. Because I'll see super modifieds a lot up here at Thompson and Lee and all that. ISMA still races a bunch up here. We have a local series that's sanctioned by the Pass guys. But even if the racing is bad, it's fucking incredible to watch these things with the big hydraulic wing on top moving in the corners and all that. Like they're hillbilly Formula One cars, pretty much, is the best way I can put it.
That's a great way to describe them.
Super cool, though. And again, I find myself watching these videos from Phoenix, the Copper World Classic stuff, quite a bit. Lots of USAC stuff out there. Definitely was a marquee event for a long time, and it's a damn shame that doesn't happen anymore, because it's definitely cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of wraps up the show for this week. And, you know, like I said, Ashley will be in Las Vegas this weekend. So when do you get back from that trip?
I get back Monday night.
Okay, so, yeah, we can still record Tuesday then. Yeah. Okay, cool.
I don't know what kind of
and that'll be your last episode for...
Yeah.
That'll be your last episode for a couple weeks too, though, won't it?
Probably. I have to have surgery that next week. Well, so I'll definitely be gone that week.
You said you're having it the 11th, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I was gonna say you'll be out. So unless we record on the 10th, which I don't know if we'll necessarily do that, but. Maybe we'll have a guest or something.
We'll wheel a new Ashley in for that.
There we go.
Maybe I'll take some clips from previous episodes and sprinkle them through. But yeah, we'll miss you. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So it'll just depend on how my recovery goes. But yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. But
building a better Ashley.
So as always, you can follow us on Instagram at Meet Me at Applebee's and Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens on all the things. If you want to check out a couple of the hats and stuff from the estate sale, I've got some of those in the shop right now. And If you want that Jeff Bloodhound jacket, I will say that Martinsville weekend, I have a big Hendrick Motorsports drop planned for their 40th anniversary. I've been saving up stuff for the last few weeks. So
$100,000.
Knock a couple zeros off that, and maybe that'll be what I'm trying to get. But that stuff will be available soon. Ashley, you know, I don't know. I heard you change your name. Is that what happened?
No, did I?
Nope.
She's gonna come back from surgery with a new name, folks.
Yeah, y'all wish me luck this weekend in Vegas.
Yeah, when are you going out there again? You're gonna be there for the whole weekend, right? The whole shebang.
Well, I'm not going to the track all weekend. I'm flying out to Vegas on Friday, but I'm only going to the Cup race. So I've got other family stuff to do. That.
And this is a new racetrack for you, right? You've never gone out to Vegas?
It is. I've never been out west for a race, so I'm excited.
That's cool.
Some different. Check it off the list.
Yeah. Well, the races have been really good there, so I'm looking forward to hearing your on-the-ground analysis of what we see. Rob_Oates_unofficial is my personal Instagram. My band D's Wild Plains is going out on tour. I've talked about it a bunch with Charlie Marie, playing a little honky-tonk set with her before our sets every night. It's going to be really good. We've been working with her, and I'm telling you, it sounds fucking excellent. So you don't want to miss that. Check it out. All the dates out on These Wild Plains social media and my own, too. Also, we're playing this Friday night in Putnam, Connecticut at the Stomping Ground again, another little acoustic set just to, you know, sing for our supper and have a few drinks and politic with you guys. So that'll be fun. Also, again, it's been a while since I've done a Flow Racing shout-out, but kudos to Matt Dillner for wearing a These Wild Plains hat on the broadcast. I feel like he thought I was going to text him about it because he sent me a photo of the screenshot, and I was watching it. I just completely fucking missed the fact that he was wearing that. But it's really cool to, you know, flip on the TV and see your band represented. And he's a big supporter of us, and it was really cool for him to do that. So thanks, Matt, for wearing that hat. It's a good-looking hat, and we'll be selling those, by the way, on this next tour. So if you want to look just like Matt Dillner, then you...
Certificate of authenticity.
I'll print one off and sign that fucker for you. So,
what's the first date of that tour?
First date of the tour, we're going to be in Philadelphia, March 16th. Baby's First Rodeo at Ortlieb's. That's going to be a good show. That's a fun little country night they do down there. They always pack it out. I don't know if you've ever met this guy, Donkey, before. You ever met him, True Love?
Yeah, I met him at Thirsty Beaver one time.
Yeah, Donkey's the man. He's a great line dance instructor, just a real sweetheart. I fucking love Donkey, and I'm excited to see Donkey at Baby's First Rodeo. He might be at the Beaver, too. I'm not really sure. But
Donkey sounds cool. Donkey.
I think he's a race fan, too. So
he is, guy named Donkey. You met him at the Beaver.
Yeah, so. None better than Donkey. He's such a good guy, and I'm excited to see him. But that'll be the first night he's running the show. He'll definitely be there. And always good to see friends out there, and I'd love to see you, too. So.
There you go. All right, folks. Well, it looks like the check is here. So thank you once again for joining us at Applebee's, and we will talk to you all next week.